Welcome to this sermon podcast from the Memorial Church on Emmanuel Road in Cambridge, England. The church website can be found at www.cambridgeunitarian.org. My name is Andrew Brown, and I'm minister to this liberal congregation, and this is my sermon of the 15th of January 2012, called By Another Way. As always, the sermon here draws on my own faith and experience, and it's offered to the congregation and to you in this podcast simply as an encouragement to further reflection and thought. It is most certainly not a definitive statement with which you must agree. As my 16th century Polish Socinian forebears said, whilst we declare our own opinions, we oppress no one. Let every person enjoy the freedom of their own judgment in religion. Only let it be permitted to us also to exhibit our view of divine things, without injuring and calumniating others. In that spirit, I bid you welcome. Although I deleted them from the final script, in the first draft of last week's address, I originally concluded with a few words about the final verse of our reading for Epiphany Sunday, where the Magi, being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, departed to their own country by another way. Well, today I've revisited my concluding words and expanded them into this address. As I've mentioned a couple of times in the past few weeks, given that in our own age we can see clearly that our understanding of in what consists for us reality, our world, is always experienced within horizons which are made up of a series of echoes, linguistic resources, messages from the past, messages coming from others, and others beside us, such as other cultures. One of the echoes that for me came into play as I continued to think about the Magi's return by another way was Robert Frost's very famous poem of 1916, The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both, and be one traveller long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other, just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. It seems important to add to the mix here one message coming from another culture besides our own, namely the Chinese word or concept of the Tao, which has become very much part of our own Western philosophical and religious lexicon, though of course in a distinctive way not always entirely akin to the way it is used and understood in Chinese contexts. Although the basic generic normative meaning of the word Tao is simply road or way, an additional meaning, and the one I play with today, is the spirit or quality of mind one is cultivating. Indeed, the whole address is about cultivating a certain spirit or quality of mind with regard to how one lives a life. So now, within our own cultural horizons, and with these echoes, linguistic resources, messages from the past, and messages coming from others in play around us, what useful lesson might be showing up for us in this short verse found in our culture's great normative Christian text? Well, to draw out one important lesson that I see showing up, you may see others. The first thing I need to do is place before you an insight disclosed very much to our own age. It is, as the philosopher Ian Thompson puts it, the feeling that what makes the great texts great is not that they continually offer the same eternal truths for each generation to discover, but rather that they remain deep enough, meaningful enough, to continue to generate new readings, even revolutionary rereadings, which radically reorientate the sense of the work that previously guided us. This insight is worth remembering, especially at a time when religion is making a return to our civic space, and alas, often in some very conservative and reactionary forms. These religious traditions and their contemporary mirror images, namely certain kinds of atheism, not all, but certain kinds of atheism and scientism, love to play the two paths or two roads game. Down one, they say, lies darkness, down the other, light. Down one lies heaven, the other hell. Down one lies truth, down the other lies superstition. Ne'er the twain shall meet, or so they say. And the Bible, as our other great religious texts, the Bible is, as we know, caught in the middle of all this. But Thompson's words remind us that if we are smart about how we use this great text of religion, and other texts that we've inherited, we can always turn it to good, liberal use. One of my own great heroes, the Marxist and atheist Ernst Bloch, pointed out in his book Atheism in Christianity that the Bible and the Church are not one and the same. The Bible, he says, has always been the Church's bad conscience. And, as Bloch goes on to remind us, although the Bible has often been used, and is still used, as a cattle prod by the powerful against the weak, the counterblow against the oppressor is biblical too, and that is why the Bible has always been suppressed or distorted from the serpent on. Well, one of the oppressive and powerful ideas in our culture that I think we need to strike a counterblow against is precisely this two-path model of life. And here's where the biblical story of the Magi comes in, at least as a prompt for me to think about this. It struck me last week that, although when the text says the Magi returned by another way, it is clear that the author is imagining them to be taking a different actual route home, the linguistic resources available to us enable us to consider the possibility that we may also think of the Magi as undertaking their return by embodying a radically changed way of being in the world. They return by another Tao, another way of being. What this is, I think, is the one that they saw shining in the Christ child, and how I unfolded what I think we may understand them to have seen in that child. You can read about in my Christmas Day address. But in outline, I think it might have been to see God as not as a powerful being, like the gods of old, so not a being, but as unfolding event, self-giving being itself, which, when you embrace it, in turn enables quieter, weaker, less dogmatic voices to be heard and responded to. But if we lay weight on this second kind of returning, by embodying a different way, Tao, a different way of being in the world, a thought springs to mind. When we look back on our own life path, as we may imagine the Magi doing on their return, what we are commonly tempted to call taking a different path at a particular point in our lives is really to speak with hindsight of a moment or period in our life when we were able to identify that a new way of understanding the world was being disclosed to us. And with this disclosure, there also came new possibilities and new ways of opening ourselves up to the world. Feels like there's a new path opening up. Although it would be better, I think, to think of it as your path being cleared in front of you. And this should help us see that our life path never really diverges at any point. And I want to stress this very strongly indeed. But perhaps the best parable I know of living life in this kind of way, the Tao, or some kind of Tao, is told by the theologian George Kimmick Beach. He said, "As a potter, you form a lump of clay. You make many decisions, exercising your freedom both consciously and instinctively, to one end, a finished ceramic. The original decision in pottery making is not unlike the original decision in faith. Once the direction is set, soon it will be too late to change your mind. Choosing a bowl excludes a pitcher. Now choices are being made within an ever-narrowing range. Necessity is closing in on the maker. But this is the miracle of creation. A reversal is also in progress. For the embrace of necessity gives birth to a greater freedom. With each new choice, new, more refined choices arise. Creative freedom is growing exponentially. The perfect end to the exercise of freedom is perfect necessity. We think this bowl or this life can be only what it must be. But although we may find it relatively easy to see how this is true with regard to a pot, we sometimes struggle to see how this is true of our own lives. And this is partly because we have inherited a tradition that really loves two-path thinking. How those of conservative persuasion play this out is different from those of a more liberal persuasion, but make no mistake, both do play it out. In a nutshell, and I realise at the risk of oversimplification, because there's much blurring of boundaries here and certainly a lot of grey, but in a nutshell, the conservative, whether they're religious or secular person, tends to insist on the absolute need to follow the right path. So if you find, feel, or you are told you are on the wrong path, you must change. You must convert and get back on the right track. If you find you have gone by the wrong path, then you must retrace your steps and roll back the corruptions and distortions, leaving all the old behind, in order to arrive at the place where the paths diverged, and you can make the necessary change, from the wrong road to the right road. The liberal, religious or secular person, tends to be more equivocal. They want to be able to hold open, in principle at least, all possible paths. And this is because they know that neither one nor the other is absolutely right nor absolutely wrong. But this can mean, perhaps even often means, that the choice to follow one path or another diminishes importance. And so, to sort of bounce off of one of Frost's phrases, the choice doesn't make all the difference. In many liberals' minds, most paths are really just as fair as any other, and the choice for travelling one rather than another is often based on something as minor and inconsequential as being merely grassy and wanting a little wear. And as a little warning, I've been in the full-time professional ministry now for 12 years, and I've seen how for many liberals, especially towards the end of their life, this can result in the feeling that they've never quite lived their life fully, never done what old Thoreau tried to do by going to Walden Pond. And if you will remember, he said, "I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to put to rout all that was not life, and not when I had come to die, discover that I had not lived." Anyway, on the one hand, conservative positions tend to become narrowly focused, exclusivist and restrictive, and on the other, liberal positions tend to become unfocused, blind to the importance of real difference, not least of all because real difference can speak of the authentic life, that which is genuinely yours. And in wanting to keep open the theoretical possibility one could check out the other path at a later date, it becomes impossibly vast in reach. Frost's own relationship with religion was complex and ambivalent. That's one of the reasons why I like him. It's also why I think his poems form a great text of our culture. But what we can say for sure was that he was well towards the liberal end of the religious and spiritual spectrum. Like us, he inherited a two-path tradition of thinking, and in his poem, his genius as a poet is revealed in how subtly and gently he places before us the problem we liberals face, and gives us the gentlest hint of a solution, appropriate for us in our own age, the solution I've already gestured towards in Beach's parable of the bowl or pitcher. The body of the poem, as you heard, those first three verses, explores the flawed liberal dream of being able to hold together in one lived life many possible divergent paths. Frost describes them, weighs them evenly and dispassionately, and only then does he say he followed one, but only after he has categorised the first as to be kept for another day. Frost's last verse gently reveals that perhaps he really knew how silly and wrong this idea was, and this is perhaps what his sigh reveals, when he says, "I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I, I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. What makes all the difference? What makes Frost authentically himself and not someone else? Is not that there exists in him, as he looks back and sighs, multiple possible paths which he may or may not have taken, but that his life path, like every one of our life paths, was the only road he travelled. It was always going to be the one less travelled by, because it was his and only his. It was and is, and always will be, genuinely unique. And that's what makes all the difference. For you, for Frost, for me. Frost is reminding us that human freedom does not consist in keeping open endless diverging possible paths, but in learning consciously to embrace and embody one's own single path. It seems to me that it's only when our own path is consciously embraced by us, just like this, that it turns into something we might legitimately call a Tao, when your path and your life become one. And human freedom also consists in being awake to the moments when, as we make more refined choices, our path's meaning changes for us, and we enter for a moment a clearing where authentic, new, subtle and refined possibilities show up to us. In other words, our freedom is not so much in our ability to change the world. We all know we can really change very little about the world, but in our ability to reinterpret it. It is this recognition that helps us discover that in truth, a truly lived life, rooted in reality itself, aware of reality, paying attention to the path as you walk it, is always greater and more meaningful than any text, and is always capable of generating meaningful possibilities that can radically and creatively reorientate not just ourselves, but whole societies and cultures.